Explicit content is found in this episode. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to the True Crime Fan Club Podcast. I'm your host, Lainey. Over the last 2 years, I've covered cases that have had some recent developments. The true crime community is still reeling from the news that the elusive East Area Rapist, or the original Night Stalker, has been apprehended. However, I will not be discussing those developments. You can check out the podcast called Criminology to get a full season of the Eurons case and new updates. In today's episode, I will cover the updates of the Christina Morris kidnapping and Jacqueline Vandergriff's murder. Okay, on to the show. On January 22, 2017, I released the episode titled Help Find Christina Morris. This episode detailed the disappearance of 23-year-old Christina Morris, who disappeared from a shopping center in Plano, Texas, on August 30, 2014. A missing persons report is filed with the Plano Police Department by her father, Mark Morris, on September 2, 2014, after not reporting to work and making no contact with her family. When friends were questioned about Christina's behavior that evening, they indicated that she was upset with her boyfriend, Hunter. She then decides to end the night of partying and head back home to the apartment she shares with Hunter, which is located in Fort Worth, Texas, approximately 45 minutes to an hour away from Plano. When friends mention that Christina was escorted to her car by Enrique Orochi, an acquaintance, he is quickly contacted by Christina's stepmother, Anna, and detectives from the Plano Police Department. Enrique acknowledged that he walked Christina to her vehicle, but that he was parked in a separate garage and left her once she entered her vehicle. He states that he is not sure what became of her after they parted ways. The investigation continues into her disappearance, and surveillance video shows that Enrique and Christina had in fact parked in the same garage. Enrique is approached with this new evidence, and he then states that he must have been confused when he first spoke to them, but he denied ever seeing Christina after he left her at her vehicle. Authorities are suspicious of his inconsistencies and notice cuts and scrapes on his hands and arms. They also request his consent to search his vehicle, which he grants. To answer for the cuts and bruises, he states that he was rotating the tires on his Camaro when a tire fell on his arm. He got frustrated and punched the passenger side of the vehicle, denting the corner. Friends who were with him that evening would dispute that they saw any bruises or cuts on his arm. Police take photographs of his hands and arms and record it as evidence. They also search his trash and find cleaning rags, towels, and emptied cleaning bottles. These items look to have been recently purchased. What was Enrique cleaning up? On September 15, 2014, Enrique's regional manager at the Sprint store he works at contacts the Wiley Police Department and files a theft report on Enrique. Enrique stole a gold Samsung Galaxy S5 phone and activated it on his personal account. The date of the activation was listed as August 25, 2014. He was arrested that same day and released on bond on September 22, 2014. The phone was wiped by Enrique at some point. Police conduct another trash pull a couple of days later and find more cleaning supplies and a note written in Spanish listing the following: black shirt, text from the 29th through today's date, bank bills, and cellular bills. Police also contact Kroger, a local grocery store, to obtain the security footage from the day Enrique visited. He is seen on camera, curiously washing different parts of his vehicle. This triggers authorities to request another search warrant on his car. It was clear he was hiding something and was very interested in erasing anything that tied him to Christina. In December of 2014, the evidence processed from Enrique's vehicle confirmed that Christina Morris was in his trunk at some point. On December 13, 2014, at 7:50 a.m., he is arrested for the aggravated kidnapping of Christina Morris. He is arraigned a day later. According to the grand jury indictment, Enrique was accused of intentionally or knowingly abducting Christina Morris by restricting the movements of said Christina Morris without her consent so as to interfere substantially with her liberty by moving her from one place to another or confining her with the intent to prevent her liberation by secreting or holding her in a place where she was not likely to be found, and that he acted, quote, with the intent to violate or abuse sexually Christina Morris and terrorize Christina Morris. His bond was set at $1 million. Enrique would be found guilty of the aggravated kidnapping of Christina Morris. But before we get to the sentencing phase, I wanted to reach out to people who knew Enrique while he attended Allen High School. My friend went to Allen High School, and I recall sitting at the Saxby's coffee house talking to him about this case and how insane it was as it was all unfolding in 2014. I recall how surprised he was to hear that Enrique was the suspect. I've opted to keep him anonymous for his privacy. I will read his responses to my questions. Question number one, when did you first meet Enrique, and what is your overall impression through your years of knowing him? Answer, I met Enrique in middle school football. I felt like he was generally a pleasant person in middle school. It seemed to me that he liked to test borders, meaning he did act out, and he had a temper. However, we did have very troubled kids in our middle school locker room, you know, people who were shot and shot others and arrested for armed robbery. But Enrique was not in that group. Question number two. Do you recall when we were in Saxby's and I was telling you about the crime and who was a prime suspect in her disappearance? I recall you being shocked. Why? Answer. I think that it's shocking to hear that anyone that you know may have committed such a heinous crime. In addition, as mentioned before, there are many people that I wouldn't have been surprised to have heard did something like this. Enrique was not one of those people. He had his issues. Maybe he talked back to authorities and got into fights at school. However, he was always nice to me and never pressured me to do drugs or anything, even though he obviously did them. I also knew Hunter Foster, Christina's boyfriend. I had one class with him in high school. I wouldn't say that I knew him well, but he was a douche. He always loved to brag about his swag. Same kind of person, though, sent to the principal's office quite a bit for mouthing off or refusing to do things, and I don't think he did very well in school. He definitely thought that he was too good to perform basic tasks. Question number three. Do you believe that Enrique is responsible for Christina's abduction? Answer. I do believe that he is responsible for something. I definitely think that there was a struggle, and that there was wrongdoing. I cannot say he murdered her for sure. I think the evidence definitely points towards wrongdoing, but does not suggest that he murdered her, at least in the car or in the parking garage fight. At this point, we need a body to be able to put the pieces together. Question number four. Do you believe that Enrique is withholding information that could possibly incriminate him in something more nefarious than what he was convicted of? Answer. I don't know, honestly. To be honest, I don't see the advantage of him holding out information. He has essentially been sentenced as if he were a murderer. He could most likely tell where she is without incriminating anyone else. I also think that the longer we fixate on Enrique, the longer that we could be letting someone else who may have been involved run free. Now, I asked these questions in 2017. Shortly after I released the episode, Enrique was sentenced to life in prison. And when the sentencing was handed down, Enrique remained emotionless until Mark Morris approached to make his victim impact statement. When Mark asked Enrique to look at him, he just smirked. Enrique's attorneys appealed on the grounds that there was not enough evidence to convict, that there should have been a change in venue due to the publicity of the case, and that the warrants issued by the detectives were defective. His appeal is still pending review. On March 7, 2018, construction workers in Anna, Texas, were clearing brush and excavating for a new housing development when they happened upon skeletal remains. They immediately notified the Anna Police Department, who brought in the Plano Police Department, since it was in an area that had been searched numerous times by Team Christina, a group of dedicated volunteers who spent almost every Saturday since her disappearance searching Collin County for Christina. News cameras captured Christina's mother, Johnny Hare, formerly McElroy, arriving to the location after the remains had been removed by the medical examiner's office. She was there to leave flowers. In my gut, I knew they had found Christina. Johnny's gesture of bringing flowers to the site solidified that feeling for me. The field where Christina was found was less than a mile from where Enrique's cell phone was the morning after she disappeared. As I mentioned earlier, it had been searched many times, but she had not been discovered. It's still not clear how her body was missed unless she was heavily covered or buried by the debris that had been cleared. Enrique continues to maintain his innocence, and a murder charge is expected in this case. I will provide additional updates in the event that this goes to trial. My deepest and sincerest condolences go out to Christina Morris's family and friends, who finally have resolution but no closure on her death. My hope is that justice is served. This case was very close to me, as it is in my hometown, so be sure to check out the Help Find Christina episode to hear more details surrounding her disappearance.
I'm going to pause the case right here so you can hear a word from our sponsor.
Each year, I select a patron-only episode to release to the public as a preview for what you can expect as a patron, should you choose to support the show on Patreon. Currently, I have been focusing on death row cases in Texas, but I did cover the murder of Jacqueline Vandegrift. I will play the episode now and then follow up with updates.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jacqueline Vandegrift, but friends call me Jackie. I am originally from The Colony, Texas, but I moved to Frisco when I was in elementary school, and I graduated from Wakeland High School. I am currently a junior here at Texas Women's University, and my major is nutrition with an emphasis in wellness. So thank you for watching. I am really looking forward to learning about all of you and learning with you in this class.
It was August 23rd, 2016, and Charles Bryant was being broken up with. He couldn't believe or comprehend what was happening. He loved her. Didn't she know that? He needed her. Her love got him through his day, and now he was alone. Now he had to figure out what to do and how to live without her. He begged her, "Please, stay." She couldn't and asked him to leave, so he did so, but he was reluctant. They had only been dating for 3 months. Charles was 30 years old and was from Hazlitt, Texas. It's about 15 miles north of Fort Worth, Texas. He liked to stay in shape and often posted on his Facebook page videos or photos of him working out. He worked at the Urban Cowboy Saloon in Fort Worth. It's the largest LGBTQ community bar in Fort Worth. It's a dance and nightclub, and Charles was well liked by the patrons. He was also a personal trainer who often congratulated his trainees via his Facebook page. What he would later be accused of doing would shock his friends, family, and coworkers. Charles battled depression and invested a lot of himself into his romantic relationships. That explains why he was so upset over his recent breakup. He wasn't ready to give up on his relationship, and so on August 24th, 2016, he makes his way to the University of North Texas, which is located in Denton, Texas. Again, it's about a 30-minute drive from his home in Hazlitt. He arrives to his ex-girlfriend's dorm room and knocks on the door. She checks the peephole and is really nervous because she never told him where she was living. She walks out of her dorm room and he asks her if they can talk. She agrees and walks to a common area where there's a lot of people. Charles leans in for a kiss and she pushes him away. He begs her again to get back together, and she declines. She asks him not to come back. He leaves, and she files a harassment complaint with the UNT campus police. The next day, UNT issues a trespassing complaint and bars him from the university campus. Charles returns to Hazlitt and begins posting melancholy statuses on Facebook. On August 31st, he goes to Buffalo Wild Wings where his ex-girlfriend works. He goes to deliver a note to her and he sits at the bar and orders a drink. He asks the host to be seated in her section, but she says the section is full. His ex-girlfriend approaches him and sternly tells him that she no longer wants to see or speak to him. She calls police and informs them of the incident. Charles is later contacted by UNT police and is told that if he contacts her again, criminal charges will be filed against him. He posts a picture on his Facebook of himself out partying with three women. He posts a picture on his Facebook of himself out partying with three women. When somebody says he looks good, he complains that he just went out to see a friend and to distract himself from his ex-girlfriend. It wasn't until September 6, 2016, that Charles was beginning to lose control. He again arrived at his ex-girlfriend's dorm room and knocked on her door. She looked through the peephole cautiously, but she didn't answer the door. He told her he knew she was there and he just wanted to give her something. This frightened her and she went to her roommate's room and called the police. Charles had already left by this time but was quickly apprehended by UNT police and arrested for violating the trespassing warning. Someone who had witnessed the arrest took a picture of Charles shirtless and smiling as he's being handcuffed. He's booked into the Denton County Jail but posts a $500 bond. His ex-girlfriend applies for a protective order detailing the events from the past week, where she felt stalked by Charles. The judge approves the order and an arrest warrant is then issued on September 7th. He's booked again into Denton County Jail, but he again is released just after 2 days. That night, he posts on his Twitter a picture of the flowers he bought her with the caption, "Pretty flowers though, right? So much for being a nice guy." Not much is known about September 9th through the 13th, other than what he posted on his personal Facebook page. The night he was released from jail, he posts, "Acoustic guitar and a bottle of wine. I've got a lot on my mind, and I've got to play till I feel fine, or find a better way to pass the time." It was clear by his posts that he was beginning to grow more and more troubled over the loss of this relationship. It is now September 13th, 2016. And 24-year-old Texas Women's University student Jacqueline Vandegrift was a junior studying nutrition. It's alleged that Jacqueline had connected with Charles online via the dating app Tinder and agreed to go out with him that night. They meet at the Fry Street public house. They are seen on surveillance video talking and drinking. She later sends a tweet out saying, "I'm glad I decided to get off Tinder and walk to a bar." They then head to another bar called Shots and Crafts. They are again captured on surveillance cameras, leaving the bar at 9:45 p.m. Her cell phone pings towers that are heading towards Charles's home. Nothing has been released about what happened or what was said between him and Jacqueline, but at 4:41 a.m. on September 14th, Charles walks into the Walmart store in Hazlitt to purchase a shovel. 2 hours later, a 911 call is made to Grapevine Police, which is 20 miles from Charles's home. The caller says that there seems to be a fire and that a Caucasian man was standing over that fire, but he was seen leaving in a light-colored SUV. When the fire department arrived and extinguished the fire, they found a very gruesome scene. It was the dismembered and burnt body of 24-year-old Jacqueline Vandegrift. The man who was standing over that fire is believed to be Charles. We don't have specifics on how or why Charles murdered Jacqueline, but his behavior and social media habits seem to remain the same after the murder. On September 15, 2016, they conducted an autopsy and identified Jacqueline by her fingerprints. While Jacqueline was lying cold, dead on the coroner's table, her Twitter account posts the following tweet. "Never knew I could feel this way." There was no way her phone could have sent that tweet, or rather, there was no way that Jacqueline could have sent that tweet. The same day, Charles posts on his Facebook, "Full moon, let's see what trouble I can get into." On September 16th, 2016, he posts, "Never let anyone else dictate your life. If you're happy and aren't hurting anyone, Other people's opinions don't matter, be it family, friends, strangers. Do what you want. Love who you want. Live your life. A friend comments, "You drunk?" He says, "Not since last night, just high on life." On September 17th, 2016, just 4 days after the murder of Jacqueline, Charles emails his ex-girlfriend over 5 times to ask for the charges to be dropped, to reconcile, and to say that he loves and misses her. She notifies the authorities, and a warrant is issued for his arrest. By the 18th of September, a search warrant is issued for his home after police discover he was the last person seen with Jacqueline. They find a hacksaw with possible human hair and her purse in the trash can. Further, they find a patch of grass that looks disturbed and dead. It looked as if someone was beginning to dig a hole. Also missing from the home was one of 2 blue kiddie pools. He was arrested and charged with capital murder on September 19, 2016. He was issued a $1 million bond.
A Texas man has been charged with capital murder in the death of a 24-year-old college student whose body was found dismembered and burned in a park. The body of Jacqueline Vandegrift was discovered by firefighters in Grapevine, Texas. They had been working to put out a fire when they found her remains. Authorities say Charles Dean Bryant and the student were seen together in a bar the night before her body was found. Bryant had been busted earlier this month for stalking a student at the University of North Texas.
A memorial was held 2 days later to remember Jacqueline and her larger-than-life personality. On August 24, 2017, he was indicted for the possession of child pornography after detectives discovered images and videos of young children engaging in sexual conduct on his personal device. This is a third-degree felony in Texas. His first court date for both cases is December 4th, 2017, and he remains in the Tarrant County Jail. I plan to update y'all on the status and progression of his case as time goes on. I chose this particular case because it was so out of the blue. Charles did such a good job of hiding his true desires and concerning behavior. Does he remind you of anyone you know? That friend who posts, you know, those sad sap statuses on Facebook or Twitter? I wonder if he's acted out like this in the past. Was this a fantasy or did he just snap? I don't know. I'm sad that Jacqueline lost her life doing something that so many people do every night. Meeting a stranger for a date. We don't know how long they spoke and we don't know if a hookup was intended or not that night. But it doesn't matter. Her life didn't deserve to end because she was enjoying her time as a 24-year-old woman. What do you think, listeners? Do you think that Charles' behavior could have been thwarted? I'm not so sure on my end. When he was named as a suspect and then arrested, so many people were shocked that it was him. They all said that he was such a nice guy and that they never would have thought that he could have done something like this.
Charles's capital murder trial began on April 9th, 2018. The prosecution stated that Charles intended to bring harm to Jackie by binding her hands and harming her by either using blunt force trauma to the head or strangulation. In order to cover up the crime, he dismembered her body and set it on fire to be discovered on September 15th, 2016. The defense, of course, disagreed with this argument and offered their perspective of the crime. They claimed that Jackie and Charles had consensual sex that turned kinky. He tied a zip tie around her neck and she was accidentally strangled. As a result, he panicked and attempted to bury her body in his backyard. When that failed, he dismembered her and attempted to set her body on fire. On April 16, 2018, a jury deliberated for 2.5 hours. They found him guilty of murder and he was sentenced to life in prison. He was given an additional 20 years to be served concurrently for tampering with evidence. The Vandegrift family has been forever changed by this tragedy and have informed the media that they no longer celebrate holidays as they cannot bear the thought of not having Jackie there alongside them. Okay, fan club members, as I conclude this episode, My one question to you is, how will you sleep tonight? Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and positively review the show on Apple Podcasts or your podcast player of choice. You can find us on most social media platforms, Twitter at TCFCpod, Facebook.com/TCFCpodcast. You can also find us on Instagram, TCFC_podcast. And of course, our website is TrueCrimeFanClub.com. If you have an episode request, send us an email, tcfcpod@gmail.com. Music for the show was provided by We Talk of Dreams, who created custom music just for us. Check them out on Twitter at We Talk of Dreams or wetalkofdreams.com. Content editing for this episode was provided by Brittany Martinez. Audio engineering was provided by Ches Gray, who manages Ches Gray Music.